Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A classic David versus Goliath battle. In this case, the David was represented by the Communication Workers of America. It's the story of a hedge fund that lost a costly battle. Today on the show, the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys and the latest from the United Steelworkers. Welcome to the Friday, June 23rd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with a newcomer. Name is Rita Akinsalar. Rita is a staff organizer at the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys, which is affiliated with the United Auto Workers. That would be Local 2325. And website's real simple, alaa.org. Prior to coming on staff, Rita was a social work assistant in the family defense practice at Brooklyn Defender Services, where she was on the organizing committee that won their union election back in 2020. This was not an easy task. She's going to get into the details of what happened at BDS, Brooklyn Defender Services. They're a nonprofit. They have a history of union busting. Back in 2016, BDS ran a ferocious anti-union campaign that resulted in a failed election. So, Rita came on board, and in 2020, they got to work. They learned a lot from what happened in 2016, and they made sure that they organized wall-to-wall for over a year. Finally, they took a vote, and they went union. But my God, what a journey that was. And she's going to talk about the work rules at BDS, which are so draconian. A lot of people left. They said they can't stand working here anymore. And sadly, this is a legal aid firm. And most legal aid firms, especially in New York City, let me face it, New York's union density statewide is over 20%. They're mostly union. So you would think that this would not be that difficult, but my gosh, it was. So Rita's going to be our first guest. Second guest on the show is Bernie Hall, who's been on the show before on behalf of the United Steelworkers, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce, USW.org. A little background on Bernie. He was hired at the Zinc Corporation of America going back 23 years. The year was 2000. He joined Local 8183 in Bridgewater, Pennsylvania. Bernie's a fourth-generation steelworker whose family has a long tradition of union activism, and he followed in their footsteps. Served as a Local 8183 president. Local was recognized at the International Convention for the outstanding performance of its rapid response program, and they received what's called the Spirit of the Fight Award. Bernie also served as District 10's first Next Generation Coordinator. And in 2011, he represented the steelworkers at the AFL-CIO's Young Workers Summit in Minnesota. He is now the first Next Gen alumnus to serve as director. Key word, Next Generation. What's going on in the world today? Artificial intelligence. You've been hearing a whole lot about this lately. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it a tool? Is it going to replace workers? Well, we're going to hear from Bernie and how the steelworkers feel about the use of artificial intelligence in the workplace. What are some of the examples of how it is being implemented in the workplace and what the steelworkers are doing to prepare for the future of artificial intelligence? Like many tools, they can be used in good ways and they could be used in very bad ways. So Bernie's going to talk about all that and more as our second guest on the show. Now, a brief look into the world of labor brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. $17 billion in assets under advisement, serving the needs of Taft-Hartley funds, corporations, public funds, endowments, foundations, as well as religious organizations. And they got quite a history. Been doing this since 1928. Wow, almost 100 years. Well, we've got a great story to report today on behalf of the Communication Workers of America and the News Guild. And we kind of touched on this a couple weeks ago when John Schloss was on the show. In a landmark win against corporate greed and for community journalism, the CWA beat two big hedge funds, Standard General and Apollo Global Management, which tried to devour the broadcaster known as Tegna. Here's the deal. The two hedge funds called it a merger, a statement which drew a lot of skepticism. Tegna, former media arm of the nation's biggest newspaper chain, Gannett. Gannett owns USA newspapers, USA Today newspapers. Well, they control broadcast stations in Denver, Indianapolis, Buffalo, Hartford, Connecticut, and 31 other cities. Well, the win came when time ran out on the hedge fund's deadline to Tegna to agree to the takeover, which was $8.6 billion. The News Guild, CWA, NABIT, CWA, it's the broadcast engineers, the communication workers, civic, consumer, and civil rights groups, and antitrust advocates all challenged the Federal Communications Commission over the takeover's impact on employment, broadcast news coverage, and consumer choice. So, the FCC staff kept raising questions until the clock ran out. Listen to this. The hedge funds withdrew their bid, and as a condition of the tentative agreement they had signed with Tegna, they have to pay the company $136 million to break their pact when the financing deadline ended. The hedge funds feared they could not find comparable financing after that date. A win for the two hedge funds would have consolidated control over local TV broadcaster, letting the funds slash staff, close newsrooms, cut people, and shave production costs to the bone. We have seen this happen many, many times. Who's the loser? Us. Consumers, viewers, broadcast workers, suddenly out of their jobs, even if they receive union-negotiated severance pay. Hedge funds, you have to know, are answerable only to one prime investor, and that's usually in secret. They're not tradable on Wall Street. This is just the money guys getting together, and they have done this all around the country. That's why the News Guild, which is part of the CWA, fought the takeover of Tegna. The Guild has had its own running battle against one of the most vicious hedge fund operators. That would be Alden Global Capital. And the patterns are all pretty much the same. Hedge fund is a hedge fund. Swoop in, buy the property, sell the building, get rid of the staff, cut the coverage if it's a newspaper or a radio station, and then make a whole lot of money. They basically break it up. This is a major victory for our union members who've been fighting the hedge fund takeover of local news for more than a decade, said John Schloss, head of the News Guild. For too long, hedge funds like Standard General, Alden Global Capital, and Chatham Asset Management have taken over local newsrooms, taken on massive amounts of debt, and cut jobs and local news coverage to service that debt. Well, today, we secured a major victory in preventing yet another attempt by hedge funds to take over local news. The two CWA sectors joined Common Cause and the United Church of Christ Media Justice Ministry in petitioning the FCC to reject the merger and safeguard the public's right to weigh in on large broadcast transactions affecting local news and U.S. democracy. Chris Sheldon is head of the CWA, and he said they raised the broader question of private equity's disastrous impact on U.S. media and media consolidation. The FCC listened and agreed, Sheldon went on to say. The FCC stood up for media workers by scrutinizing a hedge fund's attempt to take over and destroy more local news in the United States. News Guild CWA members have battled hedge fund takeovers of local newsrooms at the Denver Post, the St. Paul, Minnesota Pioneer Press, Baltimore Sun, Chicago Tribune, dozens of other papers. Get this, the Denver staff actually walked out one day and picketed, demanding Alden Capital, to sell their paper to investors who really care about local news, not just milking profits from assets. Wall Street continues to destroy local news, resulting in fewer watchdogs at all levels of government across North America, said John Schlois. Death of this deal should serve as a warning to Wall Street funds scheming to take over local newsrooms, and a lesson for them to work with journalists and media unions. We will continue to do what we have always done as journalists, and that is hold companies to account and defend democracy. Boy, I love it when that happens. I mean, my gosh, this would have been disastrous, and it's been going on a long time. Finally, somebody put the brakes on it. And that's the Federal Communications Commission. They kind of delayed it, and as a result, the time ran out for financing, and here we are. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to link up with the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys in downtown New York.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next portion of the show is sponsored by iMed. Switching to managed vision care may save your fund money and deliver a better experience. So here's what you do. Go to iMed.com/union, and you will learn a whole lot more. All right, let's go to the state of New York right now and talk about Brooklyn Defender Services. Not a good story. Joining us is Rita Akinsalar. Rita is a staff organizer at the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys. They are affiliated with the United Auto Workers. That would be Local 2325. And like I said, they're having a tough time trying to unionize public defenders. And most public defenders in New York City are unionized, but not at Brooklyn Defender Services. Rita, welcome to the show. Talk to me a little bit about your background here, how you got involved in this campaign. Let's start with your legal background. Was this something you wanted to do as a child or what? Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. So I'm actually not even an attorney. I was on the social work team as a social work assistant at Brooklyn Defender Services. You know, I was very interested in psychology, got an interest in legal work. All of that, I think, was a really beautiful intersection to talk about public policy, and genuinely just led to an interest in labor after working in the nonprofit industrial complex and seeing how difficult it was to maintain just a lifestyle in New York City that I could afford rent, and also really feel like my organization was living up to its progressive standards it's purported to have. And so, you know, we did unionize in 2020, but we have been negotiating a first contract since then, and it's been very difficult, as you said.
Wow. So you organized 3 years ago and you still don't have a first contract. And, you know, we have a pretty large union audience, and I think many of them know how difficult it is to get that first contract. It's ridiculous. I reference the organizing campaign for Amazon, the workers at Staten Island. Now, that was well over a year ago, and they have not made any progress in getting that contract. But talk to me about the history of union busting. Apparently, let's go back. Well, first of all, how long have you been involved in this? How many years now? Because I know the first campaign goes back to 2016, right?
Yeah. So the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys did support an organizing committee that was formed in 2016 at Brooklyn Defender Services. I will say that was before my time. That was before I came on as a staff member. And their organizing committee, for various reasons, made the decision to unionize what the NLRB would call the professional staff. So the social workers and the attorneys, it was a much smaller organization at the time. And, you know, when I look back at it, I think that that was something that could have been different. And we certainly looked at it differently when we did our organizing campaign. We made sure it was wall to wall when we started organizing in 2020. But in 2016, when they attempted to unionize, you know, they went public, there was a lot of support, and then management just absolutely laid it on thick with union busting, and unfortunately really made it, really emphasized that divide between the professional and non-professional staff, and ultimately it was successful, and they went to an election and lost. And so it took several years after that for another organizing committee to come together. I will say I started at Brooklyn Defender Services probably around 2018. And I think I was told by a colleague, if you say the word union in the hallway, you'll be fired on the spot. So it was a really common experience that I felt other people had as well. And so we really are unionizing as an organizing committee was very much in secret, as it often is. But it felt really scary to do. And it took, you know, an entire year to get a card signed and to finally go public. So we started in 2020. We went public in the summer of 2021. And at the time, Lisa Stribersdorf, their executive director, did say that she would issue voluntary recognition. We had a lot of elected officials try to reach out to her and demand that she issue that voluntary recognition. And even though she said that she would do that initially, after some time, she decided, nope, we need to go to an election. It was very typical union busting, making excuses that, oh, the minority of the office needs to be heard, when we were showing that we had an overwhelming amount of support in the form of cards. She wouldn't allow it to go to a card check. But nevertheless, we did go to an election in September of 2021, and we won in an absolute landslide. And at that time, that's when, you know, it got even more difficult, because then we had to sit down and start negotiating the contract.
Yeah, well, I'm going to get into that in a minute. When you say a landslide, how many people work at Brooklyn Defender Services, and what was the vote when you talked about that landslide?
So at Brooklyn Defender Services, there are about 400 members. And as you know, we only need 51%. So we had over 70% who voted in favor. And it was a really difficult thing, because they played upon that divide that existed in 2016 of trying to pit the quote-unquote professional staff versus unprofessional staff against each other. You know, if I had been at Brooklyn Defender Services in 2016, since I'm not a licensed social worker, I'm not an attorney, I wouldn't have been part of the union. And so the effort in 2020, making sure that it was wall-to-wall, was really important. We had to overcome that narrative that, you know, they were trying to pit the professional and not unprofessional staff against each other. So I believe we had above 70%, both in curbside and also ultimately in our election.
You mentioned that if you said the word union, you'd get fired. Did a number of people be affected by that? Were they actually fired for saying the word union?
So, you know, the people who were in the organizing campaign of 2016, some of them actually work at other legal defender services still in New York City. And we did speak to some of the folks who were on the organizing committee back then and ask them about their experience. You know, there was at Brooklyn Defender Services in the past, it has seemed like certain practices have been more union friendly than in the past, than others. In fact, the family defense practice, the practice that I came out of, they used to be unionized and they were with another organization when, unfortunately, they lost funding a number of years ago and they joined Brooklyn Defender Services. They then became, you know, non-union because the organization was did not have a union. Yeah, I had a lot of friends and colleagues who were totally scared to unionize. And it really, you saw that in the way that we were trying to effectively organize. People were really nervous about how public facing some of us were. And we recognized that some of us had more, more privilege in our job security than others. And that's exactly why we unionized, right? Was that we knew that there was an unequal amount of power in different positions for folks. And we wanted to make sure that we could support each other best that we could in unionizing, making sure that if someone was really nervous about how public they were, if they were being associated, you know, really widely with the union, that they might need to take a step back. And I really do think our organizing committee, who many of whom I'm still very friends, good friends with, was really incredible and thoughtful in that. Because, yeah, we people, you know, from 2016, almost every single one of them who was on the organizing committee is now at another different legal service provider because management just made it totally unbearable to still continue working at that organization.
That's sad. And they come across as they're pro-union. They're making it, they sound like they're socially responsible, but... And we see a lot of that. I mean, Starbucks is a good example. Trader Joe's is another one. But workers are still upset with especially wages and benefits. You mentioned the union busting. This is so bizarre because in most union busting campaigns, companies would hire a union busting law firm. We're dealing with Brooklyn Defender Services. I mean, these are public defenders here. Right. That most. I mean, the people are low. That are working in this office, did they go out and hire an outside law firm or did they do this on their own?
Yes, they did. They hired the same law firm, I believe, that they used in 2016 for the election. And I think that this union busting law firm was a little surprised because once we won the election, then they had to deal with, you know, what we're doing now, which is negotiating the contract. Their attorney who is negotiating the contract now is Lou DiLorenzo. And yeah, he's been doing employment law for a very long time, negotiating contracts. And I will say, you know, if you look up his history, what he you know, teaches in the Professional Learning Institute courses for attorneys about labor law, you can very much see that it is based in not necessarily the most labor friendly. And you're right, it's something that we see often in the public defender services that we've unionized, almost all of whom are unionized in New York City. And some of those contracts have been very difficult to negotiate as well. But I really do think that Brooklyn Defender Services is very unique in that they have really dragged this out for quite some time. And there's such a culture of fear, I think, that's instituted that if you don't, you know, try to buddy up with management because so many things, so many policies are in their discretion, that ultimately it's going to hurt you and, you know, your benefits or your ability to sustain yourself within this work for however many years you want to be there. We see a lot of attrition in public defender services. And that's exactly why we wanted to unionize, right? And it's really quite sad to see. What we're trying to do is make this work sustainable, make the organization a better place, and to see so much resistance from management purely because they want to retain discretion, particularly when they're, you know, an organization that's a nonprofit and purports to have these very socially progressive ideals.
It's very sad. I mean, I know a lot of public defenders. This is a labor of love. I mean, these are people that go through law school. They decide to be in public service. They do not get paid nowhere near somebody at a law firm. I mean, but they're defending people that cannot afford a lawyer. That's the bottom line here. And unfortunately, they're being taken advantage of. Rita Akinsalar joining us on our live line right now. She is with the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys, and the website is ALAA.org, and that association is affiliated with UAW Local 2325. We'll talk more with Rita later in the show. We're going to check in with the United Steelworkers back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis. And give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. In fact, we had a really good conversation. We always have great conversations with Melissa Cropper, president of the OFT. That was on Tuesday's show. And check out the website, awfpodcast.com, and there's a link to a YouTube video of what they're doing in New Lexington, Ohio, impoverished community. And they've got some grant money to help kids as young as third grade get involved or at least get them interested in the trades. And the IBEW, one of the local chapters over there, is helping them out. They could even take a year off the apprenticeship program if they go that route. Good stuff. AWFpodcast.com. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Rita Akinsalar. Rita is with the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys. She's a staff organizer. Website ALAA.org. We're talking about BDS. That stands for Brooklyn Defender Services. They've got a long history of union busting. We talked about that in the first segment. But in 2020, they organized and they took a vote in 2021. And by a 70%
margin, they decided to line up with the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys, which is affiliated with UAW Local 2325. We're talking about 400 workers there in legal services in Brooklyn, New York. So, Rita, I got your piece here. I know this first contract is going to be very difficult to accomplish here. But the working conditions there, I mean, if you get like a cold, or you hurt your leg, you break your leg, or something happens in your home, maybe you get a flood, I get the impression that they don't believe you, or you have to go out of your way to say, you know what, I have some problems in my personal life, you need to give me a break. Can you walk me through the conditions at BDS? Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that we've seen a lot with COVID, right, is the federal government, of course, was mandating certain sick leave days. And once that was no longer allowed, we still had that need. People were still getting COVID. People still needed to take care of their families. And yet Brooklyn Defender Services decided that they were going to have, they thought that their policy was generous enough and that they would enforce, anyone who needed to stay home and couldn't, what they saw as couldn't work from home, needed to take what we call an unscheduled day off, which is akin to a sick day. Now, so many of these workers have shown for years during the pandemic that they can work from home, that their work, of course, there are some in-person obligations if you're in court, if you need to meet with clients, but that's not even what we're trying to dispute in our telecommuting or work from home proposal. We're trying to say that, you know, if something comes up, if there's a spring, a leak that's in your house, or you have the sniffles, but you still feel fine, you just want to make sure that you're not, you know, contagious and going to pass on COVID, which is still very real, you know, to anyone else in the office, that you're able to work from home. And instead, they've just really come down very hard and enforcing a policy that you must take a sick day. And if you run out of sick days, you know, their response to that is, okay, we'll dip into your vacation. And if you run out of vacation days, okay, well, we'll try to figure something out. Well, maybe you'll borrow against future ones. Maybe it'll deduct from your paycheck. Who knows? Because there's not a clear policy on this, despite us asking management time and time again to work with us in trying to increase the vacation, increase the sick days, so that members can take those days if they really need to, but if they can still do the work from home, allow them to do so. In fact, as recently as a few weeks ago, we received a script that management had sent to all of the supervisors, instructing them on what to do if a member came to them and said that they were feeling sick, if they broke their leg, if their mother died. And I have to say, the script is so unbelievably ridiculous in the way that management is instructing these supervisors to really tap dance around having to ultimately tell workers that they're forced to use this time, even though they can work from home, even if it dips down and they no longer have any time. The script is so ridiculous that it's made its way into other states, other public defender organizations at other states. Certainly, almost every single person I know at public defender organizations across the city has heard of this. It's really quite insulting, and our members have been really upset to see that this is what management is deciding to do.
Well, you answered my next question. I was wondering if this was unique to Brooklyn Defender Services, and obviously it is. That's so sad that they have to go through there. I have to ask you, I mean, there has to be a lot of people saying, I'm done with this. I'm going across the street to work. Mm-hmm. I mean, the retention of workers, when you have conditions like this, we had a conversation not long ago with the American Federation of Government Employees, with the TSAs, and they were horribly paid. And it was ridiculous. Nobody lasted a year or two because of the conditions. Yeah. Is that the same kind of situation over with the in this legal aid office?
Yeah, I will say in public defender organizations, attrition is high higher, I think, than other organizations because this work is so difficult. You know, I will not say that people, there are certainly people who stick around for decades, but I think just by nature of the nonprofit industrial complex, people get burnt out. And again, that's part of the reason why we unionized at the very beginning of COVID is because we saw that and we wanted to fix that. But ever since then, we've seen such high attrition, and I think for a large part due to management refusing to negotiate in good faith with us. The New York Times just published an article about attrition levels at public defender offices and how high it's gotten, particularly during the pandemic. Brooklyn Defender Services was listed as the highest attrition level out of all other public defenders in New York City. We've pointed to that article to management multiple times, and instead management has just said, well, that's the work. It's just difficult. You know, people want to leave. It's almost as if they're saying, like, you know, these workers are going to leave and are ungrateful. It really is. They seem to blame the workers instead of seeing how they themselves can do a better job in trying to entice folks to stay. And you mentioned salaries as well. That's a huge part of our contract negotiation. We haven't been able to come to just have like a common understanding of how a salary scale will work. You know, there are salary scales, step scales at every other public defender organization, and Brooklyn Defender Services has just refused to adopt that. And members who can't, you know, see what they're going to be making in the next few years, be able to have a stable, predictable income for the next few years because a management, you know, insists on retaining discretion or providing very, very low increases compared to other organizations is a huge part of why people are leaving the organization.
Very sad. Seems like they got their head in the sand on all these issues. What you mentioned, wages. How far apart are we on wages right now, Rita?
Yeah, I mean, it's like we're speaking two different languages. That's the type of conversations that we're having. You know, we want a step scale placement in which members have their experience and a cost of living adjustment, a COLA, addressed every single year. You know, management for a long time in the past has looked to the Legal Aid Society of New York City, looked to their wages and tried to model their salary scales off of that. But, you know, in a three-year contract, you can't just look across, you know, the street at what someone else is making and then, you know, say, okay, this is what the wages are going to be. People want to know what their wages are going to be in the next 3 years. And so I will say we are far apart in the base salary. We are negotiating different differentials, but ultimately it's, you know, we want to make sure that our workers, particularly our workers who are not attorneys, not social workers, are making a living wage in the city. And right now they are just not making comparable offers to other organizations when you consider what the step scale system would account for, which is essentially two raises in a year. Now, we've even made a compromise on our part. I think this is really telling in the negotiations that we've had, which is we've demonstrated that we are willing to make movement. And so many times we have seen them come back to the table and either hold or basically give us a counter that just says that things are still in their discretion. And it's really frustrating to have to negotiate in that way. And members are getting very, very frustrated and not seeing a comparable salary scale compared to other organizations. You know, they're offering a $1,000 increase a year when other organizations are seeing from one step to the other, when you account for experience and COLA, much more than that. Is extremely frustrating to have to go up against.
Well, Rita, you did a great job spelling out this difficult campaign. I mean, it was tough to get unionized. I mean, they've had this ridiculous anti-union campaign going back to 2016. You finally get organized, and they're playing hardball trying to get that first contract. No surprise there, but it seems like you got a long way to go. You got our support here on America's Workforce, so give us a shout-out here. Tell us how things are going, and hopefully we can be your voice in New York City. Rita Akinsalar, she is a staff organizer for the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys. Website is ALAA.org. You can also check them out on Facebook and Twitter. It's ALAA2325. That's because it's UAW Local 2325 that they're affiliated with. Got a powerful union behind you. Keep the faith, stay strong, and stay in touch. Okay, Rita?
Thank you so much. Absolutely.
All right, we're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, Bernie Hall, District 10 Director of the United Steelworkers. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment, good benefits, ulagency.org. All right, let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show, Bernie Hall. Bernie is the District 10 Director for the United Steelworkers, longtime and very proud sponsor of America's Workforce, national website, usw.org. And he's here to talk about artificial intelligence, how the steelworkers are using that. But Bernie, we were talking before Bernie came on the show about that huge victory for the Communication Workers of America and standing up to these crazy hedge funds who have pretty much hollowed out the middle class of America. They buy a company. In this case, it was Tegna Broadcasting. They tried to, but how many times they have succeeded and they've sold off all the assets and stripped it down to bare bones. Now, Bernie, you're in the state of Pennsylvania. District 10 is all of Pennsylvania. And, you know, we've been talking about the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. They've been on strike. What was it, since last October, November, something like that? Is that right?
Of 2021. It's been well over a year. You know, it's a great example of an employer that doesn't care about the law. They certainly don't care about their workers. They had been charged numerous times by the National Labor Relations Board about unfair labor practices, and they just don't seem to care. And they're intent on trying to break the union there. But to those workers' credit, they've stood up, and they've taken this fight on, and it's been well over a year. They've actually started their own independent media source, which you can find online. It's Pittsburgh Union Progress. It's a now an alternative to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And, you know, it's just sad. This is just another industry where you see these giant corporations just taking advantage of their workers. And, yeah, you know, good for them for standing up.
Yeah, yeah. Stripping them down to bare bones, fighting the union at all costs. I mean, I wonder how much they spent in fighting the union for that time, where they could have just say, okay, we're done. Let's get this over with.
It's literally been millions of dollars. You know, it's been a big story, especially in Western Pennsylvania.
Sure.
You know, it's ironic, next to our international headquarters in downtown Pittsburgh, it's always struck me the former home of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette was right next door. The building still stands there. Marquee out front says Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. It was an entire building in downtown Pittsburgh, what was the home of the Post-Gazette. There was an entire floor that made up the newsroom. I toured the building several years ago after they moved out. And I was impressed. It was like something you'd see on TV, this giant newsroom, took up a whole floor. And they've downsized that paper so much, they literally moved into some small offices in another part of the city. And, you know, what does that mean? That those were all reporters, people doing the legwork, getting the story, writing real stories. And now it's a paper that's owned by a conglomerate, the Block family. And most of the stories are cut and paste. There are some really good journalists that continue to work there and do great work, but they've been cut down to the bare bones. And, you know, it's just another story of another industry that you get these giant conglomerates, they buy them up, they strip them down, and it just becomes a money mill for them.
Okay, let's add another component to this conversation, artificial intelligence, because I'm hearing good, I'm hearing some bad stuff where, I mean, let's talk about journalism. You can use a platform now with artificial intelligence to say, hey, write me a story, talk about this, and they'll write out the story, which means that journalist will probably lose his or her job. Now, you came to the show today to talk about, you know, the future of this artificial intelligence and how the steelworkers, well, like I said, there's good things, there's bad things. How are you embracing artificial intelligence right now, and what's your thoughts about it, Bernie?
Well, artificial intelligence, it's really become a, lack of a better word, a buzzword in the last few years, but this isn't a new topic for our union or the labor movement. Many of the workers we currently represent have been dealing with the issues of technology and artificial intelligence for years. We view it, it's both an opportunity and a challenge. We want to make sure that the workplaces that where our members are working are in the best position moving forward to compete, especially in a global market.
Sure.
And that means embracing smart and responsible implementation of the technology, all the while we need to protect good-paying union jobs.
Okay, Bernie, with that being said, Can you give us some examples of how it's being implemented in the workplace? And maybe you can be specific to the steelworkers. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about manufacturing, heavy industry. It's a major component. It's a major component in manufacturing for machine learning. One example: predictive maintenance. Manufacturers use and have used for a number of years artificial intelligence. They use it to analyze sensor data on their production lines, and that's used to predict breakdowns or accidents. In some manufacturing facilities, you'll see employers, they'll install cameras that utilize artificial intelligence to review products as in various stages of production as part of the quality assurance process. And that camera can spot irregularities, and the production line will stop. So once that irregularity is picked up, they can expect the product for compliance. And where that's important, some of these processes run at high speeds. You've got a lot of product coming off of the line, and sometimes it would take a while before there was a defect or a problem in the production of those goods before it was caught. So you can lose a good amount of product. So AI has been used to catch it earlier on in the process, shut the production down, and then a human being, a member, will go over, assess the problem, and fix what needs to be fixed.
Okay, so in that case, it's helping the worker. It's not eliminating a job, is it, in a situation like that?
No, it's not. It's actually assisting the worker. It's helping them be more efficient, especially, like I said, in the quality assurance part of their job. You're finding these issues before they become a major issue, and it's allowing the worker to go in. And actually, in some ways, it's creating more work for the individual because it's picking up on these processes that may not, or these issues that may not have otherwise been identified, and giving them the opportunity to go in and make necessary repairs or adjustments.
Okay, now there's some that are really freaking out about the future here, that it could replace their job. What's your reaction to that? What are you hearing about that? There's got to be some examples of that happening, probably right now.
Yeah, I mean, again, we talk about our artificial intelligence. I think, you know, when that word's used, people think of some futuristic, maybe something they see in a movie, right?
But right.
This isn't something that's new. When you're talking about utilizing the technology, it can be great. Again, it could be an opportunity. But at the end of the day, manufacturing, heavy industry, relies heavily on the knowledge and experience of factory operators.
Right.
Look, when a skilled factory operator leaves, that also results in the loss of the contextual knowledge of the operation. And that's just knowledge that AI can't replace.
So, Bernie, with that being said, what about the Steelworkers Union? What is the union doing to prepare for the future of artificial intelligence?
Well, a couple of things, a number of things. First and foremost, the best tool in our tool belt is the collective bargaining process. And we know that we need to help our locals ensure that when they're sitting down talking with their employers, whether they're bargaining a contract or in between contracts and issues are popping up, that the future uses of this technology is discussed. And when they're making, when they're having those discussions, not only what the technology is doing today, but what can it do in the future? And, you know, when we talk to folks about that, one of the examples that we give, it's something that everybody has, a cell phone. You point out the fact that, look, everybody has a cell phone. Everyone knows how to use a cell phone. But that cell phone today is much different than a cell phone 20 years ago.
Sure.
And that goes the same with this technology. So, you know, we encourage people when you're having these discussions with your employer, think about not only what the technology is doing today, but what it's going to do in the future. We also want to push the issue and talk about that AI is worker assisted. It's not worker replacement technology.
Mm-hmm.
This is great for our employers, for our members, to make sure that our companies are in the best position to be successful. But at the same time, we don't want that success on the back of the worker and folks losing their jobs.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure that there's a training component to upskill the current workforce to work on new technologies. Outside of the collective bargaining process, there are a number of other things that are happening. We've been working with the AFL-CIO's Working America Institute on pre-employment training programs. We've created new pilot training initiatives for our local unions, teaching them how to evaluate technology implementation in their workplace. We've provided awareness level safety training on robotics and artificial intelligence. Again, while this technologies have been around for many years, you know, we've seen a increase in its rollout in workplaces on a level, it's upscaling and it's happening in a level we haven't seen before. It's really taking off. So it's important that our local unions have the tools to do those sorts of assessments. And finally, you know, we've been meeting with universities and some of these technology developers to make sure that the workers' voice, their perspective is considered from the very beginning, the development phases. As an example, here in Pittsburgh, we've met with Carnegie Mellon University and worked with them and some of the other universities in the area that have been involved with the Department of Energy's robotics initiative. So this is something that we're aware of. It's something that we've had a lot of experience with. And, you know, we see it as a challenge, but also we embrace it to make sure that working people, our membership is in the best place going forward to be successful for years to come.
And that's what we want. Well, I'm sure a lot of people feel a little bit better because of this conversation here on America's Workforce, because you really, you know, put it in perspective. Bernie Hall, District 10 Director, United Steelworkers, District 10 of the entire state of Pennsylvania, usw.org. Great conversation, Bernie. You take care. Stay safe. We'll talk down the road. Okay, brother?
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, and you have a great day.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, the new union at Miami University, and we'll check in with the professional aviation safety specialist. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.